The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. So tonight I'm going to talk about this state of restlessness. Restlessness, of course, being one of the hindrances, and just as a review, the five hindrances are sense desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness, and doubt. So to start with, I'm just going to kind of talk just a little bit about the hindrances in general, as I've been doing each week that I've been doing this. So as we settle in to meditate, we start to notice these hindrances. We start to notice that we want things. We want to get rid of things. We feel sleepy. We feel restless, and we feel like we can't do this. I mean, this become very common for us to experience these unsettled states of mind. Things that feel like, well, my meditation is not working because all of these things are in the way. So the meditation doesn't create these states, but it more reveals them to us. We bring our mind into our meditation, our normal mind from our everyday world, and we start to look at it. And what we see is the way our mind functions all the time. We bring our habits and patterns from our daily lives into our meditation. So these hindrances aren't specific to meditation, but they are very specific patterns that become quite clear to us when we are meditating. So the hindrances are ways, I mean, they reflect essentially ways that we suffer. When we are experiencing wanting things to be other than they are, or that sense of sense desire of wanting things, we suffer because we are not satisfied with things the way they are. When we want to get rid of something, again, we're suffering because we're not satisfied with things as they are. We have to get something we want or get rid of something we don't want. Dullness and sleepiness often feels like suffering because we often resist it in the meditation. We feel like we can't meditate if we're sleepy. Restlessness feels awful. We're just feeling like our bodies feel like they want to jump out of their skin. And that feels, it's a very unpleasant experience. And doubt also, we suffer with doubt, feeling like we can't do this. It brings into question our we bring our identities into the meditation. We bring the sense of being able to do and accomplish into the meditation. And when that gets shown to be something that we can't necessarily control, we suffer. So with suffering, with this sense of feeling dissatisfied or stressed or unhappy with what's happening for us, the Buddha recommended understanding it. He didn't recommend getting rid of it. That wasn't his instruction. He said, you should understand this suffering. And so the hindrances fall into this category. We need to understand these states of mind. When we hear the term hindrance, we think, oh, hindrance, that's something I'm supposed to get rid of. Because as long as I've got this hindrance here, then I'm not going to be able to meditate. Well, that's only true if the hindrance is operating out of kind of habitual tendencies. When we turn our mindful attention to the hindrances, they're no longer hindrances. They actually are the path. They are the way forward. We learn about our minds through studying and understanding these difficult states of mind. It seems counterintuitive. It's kind of like turning into the skid, which is something that one teacher just recently mentioned, that it's kind of like when we meet difficult states, our tendency is to want to turn away. But what we need to do is turn into them, turn towards them. And that gives us the traction then to be able to meet them, and that meeting them begins to allow them to release. So tonight I want to mostly talk about restlessness. I'm talking about these each one each week, or sometimes 2 weeks. And I want to talk about how to meet it with mindfulness so we can get this traction. So this hindrance of restlessness is often, there's two parts to it. There's it's sometimes translated as restlessness and anxiety, or restlessness and remorse. I think one teacher translates it as worry and flurry. And that particularly captures the mental state of restlessness, that sense of worry and flurry. But it doesn't particularly capture the physical restlessness. So I'm going to talk first about the physical aspect, because it can be seen from both sides, both the physical and the mental restlessness. Mostly it's related to an excess of energy. There's more energy in the system, which makes it difficult for the body to feel comfortable and makes it difficult for the mind to settle down. This state of the unsettledness of the mind, particularly the restless aspect of the mind, can be seen as kind of the underlying structure of many of the other hindrances. When the mind is restless, it's kind of jumping from thing to thing. It's trying to get things. It's trying to get rid of things. So in a way, the movements towards aversion and ill and greed have a kind of a restlessness at their root. If we weren't restless, we wouldn't be trying to fix things or control things or change things. So both aversion and greed have this sense of restlessness at their root. Doubt also, the state of mind of doubt is one of trying to figure things out, of how can I do this better? How can I figure this out? Or what about these teachings anyway? You know, maybe these aren't the right teachings. And so the mind is in movement in the state of doubt. Again, that's a kind of the restless quality. And even sleepiness or dullness can come out of restlessness. I think last week Maureen mentioned how she was in a state of finding that there was a lot of cascading things to do, and her response was, oh, it's too exhausting, I have to go take a nap or I have to rest. So the mind spinning out of control can lead us to a place where we just kind of overload and shut down and move into a place of sleepiness or dullness. So this state of restlessness is kind of central. It's kind of fundamental one to understand. So first, talking about restlessness in the body and ways to work with that. You know, the restlessness of the body is really, really unpleasant. You know, it can sometimes feel like, and many of you have probably experienced something like restless leg syndrome, or just feeling of this like itchiness underneath the skin, or like there's just jumping beans going through your skin. It's so hard to sit still when you've got that kind of energy going. When the mind is restless, it also is jumpy. It jumps from thing to thing. So that's the kind of flavor of restlessness. And then the other side, the two pieces, restlessness and what's translated sometimes as remorse, sometimes as anxiety, or sometimes even as worry. This kind of restlessness is a restlessness of mind that has to do with, often has to do with replaying something that happened in the past. So that the mind is unsettled because it keeps trying to go back and create a better past. was trying to figure out how could I have done things differently so that I wouldn't be feeling this right now. So the mind tends to replay things over and over again. The worry aspect of it tends to project the mind, that restless energy into the future, kind of forward-playing scenarios, trying to figure out. I'm familiar with this in terms of trying to create all the possible scenarios for outcomes of a particular situation so that I can figure out what I'm going to do in any one of those situations. This is a form of restlessness. This, the mind just not being able to sit still, having to figure things out for either the past or the future. So this restlessness can manifest in both gross or obvious and subtle forms. Sometimes it is just so obvious, it is just hard to sit still. The mind is a mess. It's just running all over the place. The body feels like it's got incredible electrical energy running through it, and you just can't sit still. Sometimes it's very difficult to be mindful of restlessness. So sometimes it can be really, really strong. And other times it can be really subtle. It can be so subtle that it's, you know, in a very quiet state of meditation, a very calm place, the mind is pretty tranquil, and yet there's just this little bit of restlessness in the mind trying to figure out, how can I keep this? It's just a subtle bit of restlessness, a movement. This restlessness actually comes down to a little movement in the mind, and that movement can be either really obvious or really subtle. So the Buddha compared, I think in the past few weeks I've been giving the simile of the reflective bowl of water for each of the hindrances. And for for restlessness, the Buddha compared restlessness to trying to see your reflection in a bowl of water when the wind is blowing. The surface of the water is agitated, and so you cannot see your reflection. So this is the way the mind is impacted. It's difficult for the mind to be able to settle and see things clearly when this agitated movement is happening. The Buddha also compared restlessness to being enslaved. And this is an interesting one, I think. You know, when you're enslaved, you're at the mercy of someone else telling you what you need to do. And that's kind of the way restlessness functions. It's in control. And even if we want to let go of it, there's a way in which it's got such a powerful energy that it's hard to not follow its will, follow its command. So that's just a kind of an overview of restlessness, just a kind of a little bit about restlessness. And now I'd like to talk about meeting it, turning to it, turning into it. In this turning towards it. First of all, it's most important to just recognize it. Know when it's happening. Learning to recognize it, and hopefully, I think most of you know what restlessness feels like. The jumpiness of the mind, the unsettledness of the body, but be also beginning to get familiar with the subtler forms of it. The forms of just this little bit of agitation to do something is a form of restlessness. You can just be sitting in meditation and there's just this feeling of, oh, gotta do something. So the physical version of restlessness is usually pretty easy to recognize. It is that kind of, it's got energy in the body, it's hard to sit still. The kind of itchiness or jumpiness under the skin. When bringing mindfulness, when turning attention to this kind of experience, it's often really helpful to not try to narrow down the focus. Sometimes when we have a habit of paying attention to things with mindfulness, we turn our attention to something and we we kind of narrow down to say, okay, so I'm going to pay attention to this thing. With restlessness, that seems to somehow put the experience into a pressure cooker by trying to identify just what that restless experience is. You know, where does it manifest in the body? You know, trying to figure out how does the body actually feel. That seems to make it more intense, actually. So something I found is to have a kind of a very expansive state of mind when there's restlessness, to kind of open up the field of attention, kind of allow the awareness to get as big as the room, and actually see if you can allow the feeling of the restlessness to get as big as it wants to. That can seem kind of counterintuitive. The feeling is it'll get stronger if I let it get bigger. But it's kind of the way energy works. You know, if you have a lot of energy in a small container, there's more activity or more there's more dynamic movement in a small container. The same amount of energy, if you put it in a big room, it's got a lot more space, so that it's the kind of, you know, if, what do they call it, Brownian motion? You can tell me. if you have a small container and these little particles moving around, they bounce off of the walls very quickly, and they almost seem to accelerate. When you give it a bigger container, it seems to allow the energy to dissipate a little bit. So having the image of the mind getting big, of the restlessness getting big as it wants, and somehow just it just like relieves the pressure of that experience. Try it sometime. It seems really counterintuitive, but just play with it. At one time, I was sitting a self-retreat at home, and I had this experience of this incredibly strong energy going through my body. And I was at first trying to feel it, you know, to try to contain it. And then at some point, I kind of had the wisdom to recognize maybe I should just let this energy do what it wants to do and not try to control it in any way. I mean, I think when there's such strong energy going through our bodies, it feels a little threatening in a way. It's like, well, what's going to happen to me if I let this energy go? When I realized or just let it do what it wants to do, it kind of felt like this hole blew out of the top of my head, and this just like whole stream of energy just was going out the top of my head. And then it just felt like, oh, I can be with that. I mean, it was kind of a strange experience, but it was just like, well, that's what the energy wants to do. It can do that. Instead of trying to contain it in the body, I let it kind of do what it wanted to do. Another way to work with this physical restlessness, and this is a little bit more subtle. Some of you may understand this, and some of you it may be a little unfamiliar. There's a way, with every single experience we have, there is the thing we're noticing, so in this case the restlessness, and there is the noticing itself. So every experience we have has come with those two pieces. There's the thing we're noticing and the knowing of it, or the mind that is observing it. And there's kind of a way with any experience that we can begin to get familiar with kind of having the attention more focused on either the thing we're observing or on the fact that we know we're observing something. When we're focused on the thing that we're observing, so restlessness tends to be unpleasant. The experience feels unpleasant when the kind of the weight of the attention is on the restlessness. if the weight of the attention can somehow move or shift to the fact that we realize that we know the restlessness, it's kind of a subtle shift. The knowing of any experience, the knowing of any experience whatsoever, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, the knowing of it is neutral. Knowing is a very neutral quality. I think I've used the mirror analogy in here, and it's just the reflective capacity. Knowing just reflects experience. It's just neutral. It doesn't care whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And when we can connect with that knowing quality, the experience shifts. We are more in the neutral than we are in the unpleasant. There's still the unpleasant there, but the experience seems to be weighted on the side of the neutral because we're more attuned to or attending to the knowing of it. Now, one way that I have found, and the first time I discovered this, I was observing aversion, actually. I wasn't observing restlessness, but I kind of stumbled into this. I was noticing the aversion, just feeling the aversion, feeling the unpleasantness of the aversion. And then at some point, I just said to myself, knowing aversion, or aversion is known. And just that small shift in the way I was meeting the aversion shifted the whole experience. So instead of being the unpleasantness of aversion, it was the neutrality of the knowing of the aversion. And so sometimes just the languaging that you use in meeting experience can make a difference, can have an interesting impact on your experience. So often, I'd say, quite often with this kind of physical restlessness, especially when it's strong, it is compounded with aversion. And when this strong physical sensation arises, it's almost impossible not to want to get rid of it, not to feel a sense of ill will towards it or wanting to push it away. This is what is known as a multiple hindrance attack. You've got more than one hindrance going at a time. You've got the restlessness, and then you've got the aversion to the restlessness. When this kind of thing happens, you need to kind of be attuned to which hindrance is most, is outermost. Which hindrance is reacting to which other hindrance. So in this case, you know, you've got the restlessness, and then there's the aversion to the restlessness. So the aversion is kind of on the outside. It's more important to pay attention to the aversion in that case than to try to pay attention to the restlessness. Notice the aversion. Notice the fact that aversion is happening. And again, using the noting is really powerful with this, just to help. Somehow using the noting, that this noting practice of just quietly, softly in your mind labeling your experience. Somehow when you just drop that into your mind, it seems to orient the mind in that direction towards observing that thing. So if you're noticing that there's aversion there, restlessness and aversion, if you just turn your attention and just use a soft note, oh, aversion is happening. Somehow the mind knows how to attune to that. It just kind of points you in that direction, just through the use of the word. Language is incredibly powerful. If I drop a word, like right now, for instance, if I close your eyes for a moment, I'm gonna drop a few words into your space. Calm. Ease. I'm going to drop a few other thoughts into your mind. Notice the sensations of your lips, of your hands. You don't really have to do too much when I put these thoughts out there. It almost happens just naturally because I've said these things. So the noting can function like that. Using this noting practice can begin to orient you to attending to experience. And I think the using the knowing aversion, or aversion is known, also it begins to help the mind to understand or to point it to that knowing aspect, which is sometimes elusive for us. It's not so obvious for us. It becomes more clear the more you practice with it, but it is it's not immediately obvious what it is to know experience, to know the knowing. So that's some about the physical form of restlessness and working with it. So the mental form of restlessness often manifests as a lot of thinking. The mind, it either manifests as a lot of thinking, you know, with the mind just spinning in thought, or it can manifest as a sense of the mind not being able to connect with anything for very long. It goes to that thing, and then it goes to that thing, and then that thing, and then that thing, and it's just like the mind is not able to settle or stabilize on anything. It may not feel like it's thinking about things particularly, but it just is jumpy. It's jumping from thing to thing to thing. So with the form that it manifests as a lot of thinking, again, it's often helpful to let the attention go really wide. There's sometimes an emotion underneath that thinking. And sometimes you can obviously find that emotion, and sometimes it just feels like the mind is just spinning out of control and you have no idea what's really going on there. I had this happen at one point. I was driving down the road and my mind was just spinning into the future, thinking, okay, I've got to do that and that and that, and I've got to make sure that person knows that thing, and I've got to figure that out. And it was, I kept going, okay, come back, pay attention to my hands on the steering wheel, and split second later, phew, it was out again. And, you know, I just, it didn't feel particular, I mean, it wasn't pleasant, but it didn't feel, I mean, I didn't particularly notice, you know, any particular emotion under there, but it happened several times, and it's, finally I just kind of went, okay, what else is going on here? I had been kind of focused down on the spinning thought, the feeling of projecting forward into the future and trying to just come back. And when I opened up and just said, what is going on here? What else is happening? What I discovered, to my shock, was that I was happy. I was really happy. And what the spinning was about was trying to figure out how to maneuver the world in the future so that I could keep the happiness. But I had completely missed the happiness. I did not know I was happy. It's amazing what the mind will do. So when I noticed that happiness, it's like, wow, I can hang out here. You know, this feels pretty good. And so that spinning stopped when I actually connected with the underlying emotion. So emotions actually often will fuel a kind of restlessness of mind. And if we can connect with the emotion, then that restless mind will tend to stop. You know, the emotion is asking somehow for attention. And it's trying to get our attention by spinning these thoughts. I mean, that's how we spend so much time in our minds that our minds, I guess, have figured this out, and they figure that that's the way to get our attention. If they yell at us enough, they'll get our attention. So sometimes if we can just meet the emotion in the body, get to know the emotion, that restless quality of the mind will settle just by the meeting of that emotion. So coming in to the body, opening up wide, kind of just checking into the terrain of the mind. You know, what else is happening here? Is there some emotion going on? Coming into the body. The body is such a helpful place to ground when the mind is really restless. I found at one point, no particular emotion in this particular case, but just that there was a spinning of the mind, and it was accompanied by a kind of vibratory quality of the body. And I could, and it wasn't so much that there were thoughts, but it was just like a jumpiness in the mind. And I could come into the body and feel just the body, this vibratory energy in the body. It was easier to be with the vibratory energy in the body than it was to be with the jumpy quality of the mind. So often it's easier when the mind is restless to come into the body and check out what's happening. If there's a lot of thoughts, they tend to fuel and feed themselves. So letting go of the content of the thoughts when the mind is restless and in favor of meeting the body. Very, very helpful. Also helpful again to play with that knowing of restlessness, of the restless mind. That if you can connect with the fact that you know the mind is jumpy, it kind of brings a little bit of stability. I mean, it's kind of like there's the observer. It can be a sense that there's an observer that's kind of sitting kind of still, but watching the mind do its thing, jumping from thing to thing. And so the mind feels a little more stable from the observer standpoint than it does when it's jumping, when it's trying to be the jumping or trying to connect directly with the jumping. So again, coming back and perhaps using that mental noting, knowing jumpy mind, or jumpy mind is known. With remorse is a particularly interesting and challenging for us form of restlessness. You know, often remorse has to do with something that we've done unskillful in the past. And what's happening, there's at least in my experience, what happens with remorse is that there's a kind of a legitimate sense of things feel off when I've done something that's unskillful. And the restless mind around that remorse is an unwillingness to really meet that feeling. Again, it's a kind of a sense that somehow the thoughts can figure out how to talk their way out of that feeling of something feels off because I've done something unskillful. So when I find when I can turn to meet that feeling directly, that feeling of remorse directly, actually, the mind actually begins to settle pretty quickly when I stop resisting the remorse. When I stop trying to figure out how I can alter the past so that it's not the way it was and just meet it instead, then I can learn from the experience and move on. As long as our mind is trying to figure out how to rearrange the past, it's never going to come up with the answer. It can just meet that feeling and recognize, okay, in the future, I mean, we need to learn from our unskillful actions. So this isn't about trying to paper over or to pretend like it didn't happen, or to get rid of it in any way, but it's meeting the feeling, acknowledging what happened, and learning from it. Perhaps going also and making some restitution. So with remorse, we need to have the courage to face the feeling, to admit that we've done something unskillful, to actually acknowledge that to ourselves. It actually is much easier to acknowledge that we've done something wrong than to spin in this trying to convince ourselves that, well, there were all these different circumstances that made it such that it wasn't wrong. We're just trying to create some kind of false structure around our past to make it so that it was okay, when we really know that it wasn't okay. That knowing that it wasn't okay is always going to be there until we actually acknowledge that unskillfulness. So with restlessness, as with all the hindrances, turning towards it is the path through it. We do have this sense that we have to get rid of these things in order for the meditation to begin, but the mindfulness can be cultivated by watching these experiences, by turning directly towards the restlessness. These states of mind, restlessness in particular, is not something that just plagues new meditators. They are with us for a very long time. They tend to get more subtle over time. But still, they manifest. As I was talking before, they can occur in these kind of subtle ways of, you know, settling into very calm states, and then just a little bit of, ooh, how can I keep this? Or how can I change that so it's a little better? Or just, so there's often a little bit of manipulation that happens as the mind settles. These are forms of the hindrances. There's resistance that happens as we really begin to directly meet the rapidity of change in our experience. We meet directly how fast things are changing, and there's a sense of not liking that. There's a fear around it. There can even be a sense of terror around it. It's like, no, this is not acceptable the way things are. So these states of the hindrances actually are going to be with us for a very long time. There's a model I just want to mention to you. I may have mentioned it at some point in the past. A model of how awakening unfolds in our practice. And it unfolds by successively letting go of more and more things. And there are different stages. At various stages of awakening, there's certain things that have been let go of. And there's said to be four stages of awakening. At the first stage of awakening, the hindrance of doubt is let go of. At least the doubt in the path as a course. There may still be self-doubt, perhaps, but the faith in the confidence in the practice is unwavering. That's at the first stage of awakening. It's not until the third stage of awakening, which is a very, very peaceful being. There's one woman named Deepama who, it is understood, she had reached the third stage of awakening. And she was just like, I'm told, she was just like this beaming, radiant love. That being in her presence just felt like being bathed in love. And she just was very equanimous, very balanced. At that stage of awakening, it said that the hindrances of greed and aversion fall away. So it's not until that very advanced stage of awakening that greed and aversion fall away. Restlessness and sleepiness don't disappear until the end of the path. It's not until fully letting go of all of everything that we cling to, that restlessness falls away. I think that's kind of amazing. So, you know, we just have to learn how to meet these things. They're going to be with us for a long time. So I say that partly just to give you the encouragement. You know, if you're meeting these things in your meditation, there's nothing wrong. This is very natural, very much part of the practice. So it's really helpful to get familiar with them. And just to say again, you know, that when we turn our attention towards them, they're no longer hindrances. They no longer are in the way. They're actually moving us along the path. I kind of like to think of them as the compost. You know, it's like the difficulties are the compost, and then out of that compost, things bloom. So what time is it? We have some time. Any questions or comments? Okay.
I was just struck by when you were talking about remorse and trying to, the mind trying to change the past. It sounds almost exactly like intellectualization in psychoanalysis.
Say more.
Well, intellectualization is sort of thought of as a defense mechanism to that by constantly thinking about something, one is sort of... taking the emotion out of it or no longer experiencing the emotion, so it sounds very personal.
Yeah, exactly. And we do it with more than remorse, I think. You know, that's just one place we do it. I think we do it, like I was doing it with happiness. I was taking the happiness out of it. I wasn't even aware of it.
When you were talking about happiness, I was wondering... when you talked about the neutrality of knowing an emotion with mm-hmm. happiness, were you spending time knowing? Was that making it seem more of a neutral experience, or was happiness comfortable to go into?
You know, mostly I use that tool about moving to the knowing if there's some difficulty with being with the thing itself. So if... You know, if there's a difficulty with being with happiness, I wasn't particularly feeling a difficulty with being with happiness. If it had continued for a while, I might have started to notice, ooh, I want this happiness. If I'd moved to that, I might have moved to the more neutral place. But, you know, just knowing the happiness, because that would help to counter that tendency to hold on to it. But mostly, yeah, I mostly use that with difficult emotions, not so much with the... Although, you know, at some point in the practice you do need to start noticing those things because there's a kind of an inherent tendency to cling to... You know, at certain stages in the practice, you move through different places, and there's like... I do remember one time where I was just seeing things so clearly, and it's like, oh, I understand things now. You know, it's like... I'm never going to suffer again. And boy, the next day I really suffered because there's kind of that inherent tendency to cling to those beautiful states. It's an interesting term. It's called the corruption of insight, that we see something so clearly and then we cling to that thing, that knowing somehow. We cling to that. And that then we have to start noticing, okay, yeah, there's this happiness around seeing things clearly. There's a joy that comes when I can see things clearly and really be very clear that that is what is known, and so that you're not hooked in to that state. Certain stages of the practice, it becomes clear. And usually suffering is our guide. when we start suffering over wanting to have those happy states, those beautiful states, the blissful, peaceful states, then we need to start really taking care when we experience them to really know them. But until you start suffering over them, I wouldn't worry about it. Yeah.
I was wondering where fantasy fits into this. Is that a state of restlessness as well?
That's a great question. I think at its base it may well be a form of restlessness. Fantasy can come so many different ways. It can be our strategy to escape from something unpleasant. So it can manifest out of a form of aversion. You know, that when we don't like something, we just immediately move into fantasy because a fantasy is pleasant. And so we're substituting something unpleasant for something pleasant. But it is that kind of an underlying restlessness that has us not be happy with staying with the unpleasant that moves us to the fantasy. But I think the main impulsion, you have to check in your own experience. You know, it may be boredom. I could envision, just kind of a boredom producing fantasy, or something unpleasant producing fantasy, or just kind of a wandering, a habit of fantasy. Not particularly that you're averse to anything, but just that the mind, you lose track of the breath and the mind wanders off, and because you have such a habit of fantasy, it moves into fantasy. So that would be a kind of a more neutral way that it would go into fantasy. So you kind of need to look at the progression from where it comes to explore it. But it's so interesting. Fantasy is a really interesting thing. You can see something very important about your minds with fantasy. If you're experiencing a painful sensation, I noticed this for myself on one retreat, so I'm experiencing a painful experience, and then the mind goes into fantasy. I'm no longer experiencing that painful thing. The mind has the capacity to, what I understood from that when I saw that, it's like, oh my gosh, while I was in that fantasy, it was as if the pain wasn't even there. And so that's kind of a strategy that we've learned, in effect. And so what I learned from that was that the mind had the capacity to be non-reactive to the pain. The way it did it was by constructing this pleasant thing to pay attention to. But when I realized that, I wasn't being mindful in that space of fantasy. But when I realized that, oh, the mind has that capacity to be non-reactive, then essentially when the pain came, I basically just ignored it. It's like, I can pay attention to something else. I can turn my attention mindfully to something else in my experience. I don't have to be pulled to that pain. So I used that kind of as an instruction about the way my mind worked. It was really fascinating, actually, to see that. So, yeah.
I was just noticing how I was starting to go off into fantasy, and then I just tried, okay, you really got to concentrate now, really focus. And then it became like that pressure cooker that you were talking about, where it was like I was focusing too much on my breath and almost telling myself when to breathe rather than allowing it to happen.
If you have that kind of, what I recommend for that kind of thing is, here's something that often happens with that kind of fantasy. When you come back, when you wake up into fantasy, there's usually an experience of pleasant. So notice that, connect with that. Notice if the body has relaxed or kind of come into a little bit more ease, because there are times when we go into that kind of either a drifting kind of state of mind or a fantasy. Sometimes it can actually serve to relax the body and mind. And sometimes it happens because we are doing too much pressure cooking of our experience. It's like, no, this isn't helpful. And actually that drifting away can be a manifestation of letting go of that kind of intensity. And so if you notice when you come back from a wandering that there's a little bit more ease and relaxation, connect to that first. no rush to get back to the breath. Just connect to the pleasantness that you are now experiencing as a result of that. And don't judge yourself. No need. I mean, it's like, this is what's happening now. You are in this state of pleasantness. The body's relaxed. Just connect to that and see if you can be present for that. And then the breath may come in. You don't even necessarily have to go looking for it. So if you find that happening, see if you can use, it's kind of like you can use that energy of the fantasy to channel back into the meditation through the relaxation that comes from it. Some fantasies can be disaster fantasies, so they probably produce tension in the body, but I don't know if that addresses what you've...
Yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Any other questions? Comments? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that sometimes restlessness, I can apply the label to it anxiety, or I can apply the label excitement, and it's kind of the same, it seems to be the same or a very similar underlying state. And so I'm wondering if it can be skillful maybe to turn towards it with the intent of dissipating it if it's anxiety, but maybe it could also be skillful to just change the way that we label it to turn it into excitement if circumstances require us to move, to do something. It's just some thoughts.
Yeah. It's definitely true that excitement and anxiety have very similar states to them. I would take care with trying to convert what would be anxiety into, you know, trying to manipulate the mind that way. If you find that the term anxiety, I mean, because what it sounds like you're talking about is trying to find a more neutral term. Or maybe one that would help you to not be so resistant to the state. How about just energy? Just energy is pretty neutral. So there's a lot of energy here right now. And that way it doesn't have to be trying to make it something that it might not be. Now, it may be excitement. I mean, if you could try that on and say, oh, actually it is excitement. But I wouldn't try to make it excitement. Yeah.
Thank you.
So we need to stop. So thank you for your attention and your participation.